Oak session number 16759, reel 1.
Dr. Patchett, reel 1. Where were you born, please?
Leeds, Yorkshire.
Which year was this?
1920.
What did your father do for a living?
He was a publisher.
Did you go to school in Leeds?
No. First 2 years I was in Leeds. I then went to Barnsley for 2 years and then went down to Wembley, London. And then stayed in Wembley until 1944.
How and when did you come to be in the army?
I was called up in 1947. The normal call-up. I was in force at that time.
So you were a national serviceman?
National serviceman,
But you had you been a medical student at the time?
No, I was qualified. I qualified in 1944, and I'd done 2 years in hospital in London and then down in Romford.
How did you feel about being called up?
Well, I knew it had to be. I mean, you always were in those days.
Where did you go to after call up?
I was posted to Bermuda.
Sounds like a plum posting.
It was a plum posting, yes.
Which unit were you with?
At the British Medical Hospital in Bermuda. In Prospect.
So how did you come to be attached to the 8th Hussars?
If I continued as a national serviceman, I couldn't have had my wife and small daughter out with me. So I took a short service commission and was able to have them out to Bermuda.
When was this?
This was probably about March, April of 1947.
That you took the commission?
Yeah.
How long did that commit you for?
Until the beginning of 1950. I came home from Bermuda in December 1949. I did a month at Harwich as embarkation medical officer, and then I did a troop ship SMO out to Hong Kong and back. And came out then, as finished the 3 years, and I had got a job in Coventry to do obstetrics and gynecology. I arrived on the August bank holiday to start, and I got a telegram telling me to go down to Tidworth to join the 8th Hussars, recalled, because of the 5 years, 3 years service and 5 years on the reserve.
So you were a recalled reservist?
Yeah. I think we all were. I think a lot of us were.
How did you feel about that?
Not very happy. The only thing about it being that at that time, nobody seemed to think that it was going to last very long.
This is the Korean War.
The Korean War. In fact, when we got as far as Singapore, there were orders to turn around and come back because they'd got up to the Yellow River. It was just before the Chinese came in. So, you know, I mean, you didn't think, you thought it was just a nice trip on a troop ship there and back and home.
What was your voyage out like?
Very pleasant. It was one of Hitler's strength through joy yachts. gone, the name of the... But a very comfortable yacht turned into a troop ship.
So where did you finally arrive in Korea?
Arrived in Busan.
Which month was this?
November. November 50.
What impression had the unit made on you when you joined it?
Very, very good impression. They were all very likable people.
And Busan, what impression did that make?
Not very good. Pretty extremely basic, the where we were. It's outside on the coast, actually. I don't know what the name of the place was that we were in, but all very basic.
And what was your position in the unit?
I was the RMO, the Regimental Medical Officer.
How many other medical officers were there in?
There's only the one.
How long did you stay at Busan for?
Probably about a month. What happened was that the Chinese came right down and evidently instructions had been given that the Centurion tanks, which the regiment was equipped with, mustn't be allowed to fall into the hands of the Chinese. So when it looked as though the Kaesong, I think, enclave, wasn't it called? I think things have... I've forgotten what that the enclave was that they came down to. But we were all ordered over to Japan with the tanks.
Well, it was called the Busan Perimeter, actually.
Was it?
At first. But anyway,
can yeah. So we went over to Japan. That must have been towards the end of December, I should think, maybe beginning of January, to Kure.
What experience had you had in southern Korea up to then, personally?
Nothing, apart from inoculating and treating anybody who was sick in the regiment. We were right out of the fighting part.
Was there much sickness in the unit?
No. No.
What did you have to especially beware of?
Well, I think it was really more that we had to beware of, or had to be conducting immunizations almost continuously. Smallpox, the typhoid things, polio, so on, almost continuously. An order would come from the Americans to re-vaccinate everybody. And so we went round the units doing it all over again.
How long were you back in Japan for?
I think about a month. I don't know. I mean, I really don't remember. Probably about a month.
What was your experience there?
Well, it was all very pleasant. We went to... hoped to go up to Tokyo, but we couldn't fit that in. Went to Hiroshima and saw the square there where the bomb was dropped. All very pleasant. There was an Australian military hospital there. Very nice.
When did you go back to Korea then?
I'd imagine that would have been January, maybe January, February, that sort of time.
What was the reaction to the unit hearing that you had to go back?
I don't think they minded. I mean, certainly the officers were very pleased to be going back. Army officers are a funny breed, aren't they? I mean, they're trained to fight, so they want to try out their new toys and see how they work and that sort of thing. So they were all in favour of going back.
Where did you go back to?
As far as I can remember, we went back to the south bank of the river at Seoul. I think they'd pushed all the way up there.
What happened then?
What happened then? Well, first there was we lost some tanks along with the Ulster Rifles. They got overrun one night by the Chinese. But then it continued, the advance continued up to the Imjin, or just south of the Imjin. During that time, I didn't see anything of any fighting at all.
So this takes us to the eve of the famous battle.
Yeah.
Can you take me through the battle as it affected you in detail, please?
Well, I must have been probably about a week before the actual battle. There was an armoured reconnaissance over the Imjin River, Lowther Force, it was called, which I think pushed about 20 miles north and then came back down. Saw absolutely nothing. I went with that, but again, I saw nothing either. It's just there and back and back home. Then, it must have been the day before I was captured, the Gloucesters had been surrounded and they were trying to push a task force up. There were two roads going up. A task force up the left-hand road to try and make contact with the Gloucesters and recover them from where they were. That was led, I think, by Filipinos or Puerto Ricans or one of these things. And Chinese tossed a few mortars onto the leading tank, and that's as far as it got. They wouldn't go any further. So we all trooped back again to where we were before. And then the following day, I was peacefully brewing up. I think we're going to have lunch with American rations. And the 2IC of the Northumberland Fusiliers came up and said, we've got some wounded who have been cut off, and the rest of them have gone into the hills, the rest of the regiment. Could I go and recover these wounded? So I said, yes, all right. Didn't have much option, really. I mean, you can't say, no, I don't want to go. So he said, well, your lab will be under fire. You better put your eyes in armoured half-tracks, or a armoured half-track. You better put your armour up. So we put the window down, the front windscreen, and put the armour bit up. And then you just have a little slit to drive by. So we did that, and he said, you go down this road and you'll see them when you get there. So off I chugged. Unfortunately, my driver had had all his teeth out, and so he was not able to do the driving, so I was doing the driving. And I had my wireless operator and myself. So we chugged up and chugged down again. Oh, sorry.
That's all right.
Chugged up and chugged down three or four times to get them all out. And nothing really seemed to happen doing that. I don't remember any thuds on the side of the half track or anything like that, but supposedly the Chinese were there because they thought they were. And then after that, I took them all back to put them into soft ambulances to take them back to, I suppose, a field hospital. Then it was decided that everybody would retire. And I followed one of our tanks down, keeping nice and close to him. And we came to a little bit where the road went whoop and whoop, a little hairpin thing. And a tank, when it does a turn like that, throws up a great cloud of dust. And I followed behind him, and I couldn't see a blooming thing, and I went straight into a ditch. And that was as far as I got. The Chinese were there. It was a little ambush on the road. Chinese was there, and that was the end of that for me.
This was in April?
This was in April.
What was their appearance and demeanor when they first captured you?
Very good. To extent, I had a revolver on a belt. I didn't know how to use it, but I had one, because there tended to be robbers and things about the place, and you're better to have one there so they could see and you wouldn't get attacked. And I'd forgotten I'd got this blooming thing on. And they were quite polite about making me understand that I'd got a revolver there, and they wanted me to take it off. I mean, they could have shot me, I suppose. And then, when it had all calmed down, there were a few people who'd been wounded in the thing, and I'd got equipment on the half track to do dressings and so on. And I indicated what I wanted to do. And they were quite willing for me to go and get into my half track again, get a couple of things out containing the dressings. I treated one of their people who'd been shot in the groin and put a dressing on him, and went and treated the ones that were on our side who needed dressings put on. They're all perfectly friendly. Mind you, I imagine these were more or less professional soldiers.
Did they recognize you for what you were?
At that time, yes.
What then happened to you?
That evening, we were all marched up the hill to where the Chinese headquarters was. And I think we spent the night there. And then the following day, we went back over the Imjin. And we were in an underground shelter there, which, thinking of the what we'd found on the sweep north, those were probably full of Chinese troops when we actually did the sweep up, because they couldn't have got there in the time otherwise. But then we were in these air raid shelters, I suppose they were like. They were underground and covered.
What happened to you there?
Nothing. I don't know how long we were in that little bit, but then we started the march north. That was every night you'd march a bit further on until we came to the first camp that we were all together. Everybody was collected together in this one camp, which was a village.
Who exactly were you with?
Mainly Ulster Rifles and Northumberland Fusiliers. Gloucesters were over there and they didn't join us at that point. They joined us when we got to this village, which was the first proper camp.
What happened to you there?
Well, if I go back a little bit, on the march up, they recognized me as being a medical. And if anybody was sick, they'd get me to go and have a look at them and see what I could do for them, which wasn't very much, in fact. Once we got to the camp, I was no longer recognized as a doctor. The terminology in those days that we were war criminals, and the lenient policy of the Chinese allowed us to stay alive. But we weren't recognized as being, I wasn't recognized as being a doctor. The Chinese medical services would look after anybody who was ill.
What were conditions like there?
Pretty bloody awful. Food-wise, I think by that time we'd got as far as getting sorghum, which is about the best laxative that I know of. Fantastic. Just went straight through you. To begin with, we used to have to go on wood details, go up into the hills to get wood for the cooking stoves, and as sorghum was the only thing we were getting, we'd gather weeds and anything that was green on the way up and the way down to use as vegetables. But at that time, there was an awful lot of beriberi, the wet beriberi, cardiac failure, people with legs like tree stumps, and they nearly all died. They were mainly Americans, so Americans at that time. And the other things which were going on, of course, was the indoctrination. They'd get us all assembled and give us a haranguing lecture about communism and the imperialist aggressors and all that nonsense.
How did the POWs react to all that, the indoctrination?
Well, I think we're probably feeling so really ill, I suppose. I mean, I don't think any of us were very fit by that stage. And I think it just went in one ear and out the other. On the march up, we had what we called bug dust. The Chinese frontline troops had bandoliers filled with ground-up beans, a variety of beans, all ground up. And that we were fed on that on the way up.
Was that an improvement on the sorghum?
I don't think we could have lived all that long on just on the beans. That was before the sorghum, you see. Sorghum came when we got to the camp.
What kind of people were delivering the communist indoctrination?
These I mean, they spoke English. The camp commandant used to give the talk to us, and it was translated by one or other of these interrogators. And then you're also interrogated privately by these chaps. I had the one who interrogated me maybe half a dozen times. To use his words, he'd been volunteered by his village. He was a school teacher. I imagine they wanted to get rid of him, and so he was volunteered by his village to join the Chinese People's Volunteers, or whatever they were called. And he was... his knowledge of England was about Dickens' epoch. And the Yorkshire bit comes into this bit a bit. He didn't get anything out of me because I didn't know anything about the army, really. So I couldn't tell him much about the army. But I said, I come from Yorkshire, which is a little area of England, and the people in Yorkshire are hated by the rest of England because they're good at cricket. And so we're spurned and hated by the rest of England. And he took it all in as being fact. Funny little chap he was. Felt rather sorry for him.
In what way was their knowledge Dickensian?
Well, this is how he thought England, you know, if you lived in England, you lived in this sort of poverty that Dickens described.
What did you see of Korean village life on the way up?
Nothing, really.
Why? Were you under any danger from Allied air attack?
Yes. On the road, or path, no, it was a road, a track of some sort, that we were going along. We were going north, and hundreds of Chinamen with their pole over their shoulder and their two baskets, one on each end, were trotting down south with supplies. And every now and then, you'd hear a plane, and you all duck into the side of the road and wait until the aeroplane had gone over. I don't know how good they were at seeing things. Certainly no... on the way up, we had no trouble with machine gunning along the roads. Did have it once in the camp.
What opinion had you formed of the soldierly quality of the enemy troops?
Soldierly quality. I'd have thought that the ones that we first met and also the ones who accompanied us on the march up were really quite good. They're well disciplined. They weren't brutal in any way.
Did you see anything of North Korean troops?
No, nothing at all. Thank goodness.
Why do you say that?
I gather they weren't very pleasant to POWs.
So you were losing quite a lot by death on this trek north?
No, this was in the camp. No, most of us, I think, I don't think any of ours were lost on the way up.